This is Inside MSide, your favorite podcast for all things Morningside. Hear stories from students, alumni, faculty, and more about what makes the Morningside experience so special. Welcome to another episode of Inside MSide. I'm your host, Alex Waters, the Alumni Engagement Director. I'm excited about this episode. We're going to be talking about a May term. A May term is something that takes place in the month of May, obviously, and we're going to go through some of those. We actually have a guest here today, Dr. Brandon Besch, that's going to be talking about a May term that was held just this last May that people were excited, people were talking about, and I think there's a lot of different layers to it. And so we're excited to kind of delve in and just talk about that student experience.
That's
Dr.
Right.
Besch, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. It's really a delight to be here, and I'm excited to talk about it. It was a really quite a fun experience, and I think the students got quite a bit out of it. So
now I obviously answered the tough question of when a May term occurs.
You nailed it.
But yeah, thank you very much. That was that Morningside education to help me out with that one. Talk to the listeners just a little bit more about the premise of May term, what options there are for students, and kind of why we do that maybe on campus.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool thing that Morningside does. I did my PhD at the University of South Carolina, and had the opportunity to explore a lot of different universities as I was looking for jobs. And this is a really unique thing that Morningside does. There's not a lot of places that have a requirement like this. And basically the idea is, before you graduate, every student needs to complete a May term, right? And the May term, what it is it's normally a 3-week long sort of experiential learning class that takes place. Some students do a travel May term where they go study abroad, or go on a trip with faculty somewhere in Europe or in South America or wherever the case may be. And they do cultural learning experiences as part of that. But we also have on-campus May terms.
Yeah.
And the idea behind them is to really have these sort of experiential learning opportunities where we can think hard about something, with the idea of, and this it's in our mission statement, to help people become lifelong learners, right? That's really at the core of how I was conceiving of what I'm doing in my May term, was this idea of how do I help my students become a lifelong learner, do this not just now in this class, but the sort of thing they're going to do in the future. And so one of the tricks that I was trying to sort of develop as part of this was like, how do I show you that something every day, something normal that you're just going to encounter over the course of your life, actually is rich and full of academic layers and deep intellectual things you can explore and think carefully about, right? And so I think that that's really one of the main things of our May term, is really trying to teach you how to do that work of this lifelong learning experience.
I absolutely loved that. And it was almost like a teaser. You're explaining great
right.
and in depth about what May term is and why it's so important.
I listen to a lot of podcasts. I know how it works.
I like that. That was a good lead up. But yeah, I think the May term is one of the unique things that our campus offers students. I remember my May term. I remember wanting to take multiple May terms because, like you said, sometimes they're really fun experiences on campus. Like mine was on campus. It was actually the mathematics and probability of gambling games. Mm-hmm. So it was really kind of learning in depth about the math behind those types of games. But then there were other ones that are being offered centered around food or centered around, like, I always think about Rock Band. There was a band
one. Oh, was
there?
Nice.
Yeah, where people were learning instruments and playing those things. It's meant to be experiential in nature and taking something simple and really analyzing it, like you so well said. Or on the other end of the spectrum, you can go to Italy or you can go to Spain or wherever it is or wherever it could take you. There are a lot of those cool opportunities to be able to travel abroad and learn about the culture. Because the other thing that should be underlined even with those travel May terms is I know they do spend some time in the classroom prior to going because they want to be culturally competent. They want to understand what they're going into and how they can be respectful of not only cultural norms, but also just the people in general.
Right. Well, and you can see how that same concept of taking something every day and otherwise sort of ordinary and saying, let's sort of broaden it and deepen it and enrichen it is going on there as well. It's saying, hey, you'll probably go on vacations some point in life. Yeah. Here's how to do it. Here's how to do it with a little bit of depth. Right?
Yes, exactly.
And I think that's a great thing to do, right? We say as part of our mission, we're going to help you become a lifelong learner. And I think the May term is one of the big places we really help that pay off.
Yeah. So, I completely agree. It's definitely something that just adds to your experience here at Morningside. Mm-hmm. It's a value added for sure. Now, we got a little ahead of ourselves, or at least I got a little ahead of ourselves. Talk to me a little bit about what brought you to Morningside. You talked a little bit about your degree from South Carolina, but take a step back and what brought you here to Morningside?
Absolutely. So I'm actually originally from Hastings, Nebraska. I did my undergrad degree at Benedictine College in Atchison, Kansas, which is similar to Morningside, one of these colleges that popped up along the Missouri River in these smallish towns along the Missouri River.
Yeah.
So my experience in my undergrad was very similar to what students experience here, this close sense of community, building up close relationships and friendships, getting to know your professors closely, that sort of experience. And once I finished at Benedictine, I went on to do my PhD at the University of South Carolina.
And what was your major?
In undergrad, I actually triple majored and double minored. So I majored in biology, Spanish, and philosophy, and I minored in chemistry and theology. So I couldn't decide. So I did it all.
Amen.
And then I went on to do my PhD at the University of South Carolina, which is where I met my wife. We're both from Nebraska. And so we wanted to get back to the Midwest. That was one of our goals. And so as we were looking for jobs, we were really looking in this area. And I saw the job at Morningside and applied for that job and you know, really wanted it because I saw it and I started researching it online and saw, oh my gosh, this is the experience I had as a student.
Yeah.
And it's part of why I wanted to become a professor in the first place was to do this sort of work, right? To be able to speak with students and have these deeper conversations with them, not only in the classroom, but also in office hours. And also when I just run into them across campus and getting to know them through multiple classes. And there was a lot that attracted me about this opportunity. And so I was delighted when I got the opportunity to come here. So this is my fifth year here now.
I was going to say, how many years had it been? I knew it hadn't been that long, but 5 years flies by.
It sure does.
That's for sure. And now, so you don't just teach May term. Talk to me about some of the other classes you teach and what you do here on campus.
That's right. So primarily the other classes that I'm teaching are philosophy classes. And generally my approach to teaching philosophy classes here at Morningside is to approach these classes as philosophy of, right? Philosophy is, I love it as a discipline, as someone who triple majored and double minored, who couldn't decide what he wanted to do. I still sort of get to do everything that I want to do. My research is in philosophy of science, so I'm often thinking about science and how science structures and functions and works. I have a class called Philosophy of Science for Scientists, right? And the idea of that class is people who are in STEM majors across campus, not only those, but especially those, can come to this class and think about the philosophical questions that exists when we're trying to do science, right? I also do work in philosophy of philanthropy, thinking about giving and how we give well and what that means to give well and what it means to be generous and what it means on the nonprofit side to ask well for money. And I have a class called Philosophy of Philanthropy, where we think about those questions with students.
Yeah.
I have an Intro to Ethics class. Philosophy for Living class is one of my favorites, where I help people think about the fact that they're going to die someday, how to think about what the role of work really is in their life, how to live a good life, what the meaning of life is. I don't really have an answer for them on any of those questions, but I help them to raise the question and think carefully about it and try to dedicate some space and time to that. Because really, at the end of the day, here's my, you know, broad philosophical view is we're all philosophers, whether we want to be or not. You have to live a life. So the value of a class like that and many of these classes is to take the time to think about it.
I was going to say, right? Just to navigate that uncertainty and be able to wade into those waters and just have that conversation in a safe space with someone that wants to kind of guide you through that, which I think is really kind of cool. And I've heard a lot of students talk about it. And their excitement for just having some of these conversations, you know, about, again, similar or like maybe a singular concept or a simple concept, but then going a little more in depth thinking about it. Like, obviously, we're all going to die, but let's really talk about what that's meaning and how that affects us.
Or love, right? We spend a long time in that class thinking about love. And, you know, there's a lot of students that are like, I made my, you know, boyfriend or girlfriend talk to me about this now because, you know, I want to think through what this means. And I think there's a lot of fruit to things like that.
Very cool. Well, now let's bring it back.
Yes,
okay. So, so that's a little bit about you. It's great to have you on the pod. Now let's get down to that May term. And so the May term, we talked a little bit about what they mean, but now tell the audience a little bit about what your May term was and just some of the different layers of that.
Absolutely. So, my May term was called Slanja, the World of Whiskey. So slánge is a Gaelic word that means cheer. Cheers, right? And it's what you say before you drink a little bit of a wee dram of whiskey, as they say in Scotland. So it's basically like saying cheers. And the idea of the class was to explore whiskey as a cultural phenomenon, right? So whiskey is this thing that has a lot of layers to it, like these other things that we've mentioned, right? You can peel back the layers just a little bit. And a lot of people will just, you know, order a Beam and Coke and that's it, right?
But I was going to say, you can take it for what it is and be like, oh, I'm just having a drink, or you can really delve into really understanding it.
Yeah, and I mean, the main goal of the class, if I was going to put it in a single sentence, my goal was to teach them how to drink a glass of whiskey like you read a good book, right? Where the idea is you don't just do it and then be done, right? But you stop and you consider and you think and you think, ooh, what's the cultural history that informs this, right? What's the process that led to this? Why did they make this choice in their aging process, right? And stopping to think about those questions, not only is it just like good intellectual activity, I think it also enhances the experience of drinking a good whiskey, right? Because there's actually good research that shows, maybe getting ahead of myself a little bit here too, but there's good research that shows that stopping to think through the process and the experience, whether you're drinking wine, whiskey, or just having a good meal, enhances the experience, right? And so that was the goal. So we covered the history of whiskey. We explored when it first developed in Scotland. We looked at how it spread throughout the world, to Ireland, to the United States, to Canada, to Japan, to India. We looked at how it sort of got there. We looked at the chemical process that brings about alcohol. We looked at the distillation process and the fermentation process. And we got the opportunity to go to distilleries here in Iowa, because Iowa has a great whiskey culture. We were able to go to distilleries and see that process and talk to the distillers and hear how they do it. And so the goal throughout was to really try to understand whiskey as this cultural phenomenon, right? What is it about Scotch that makes it expressive of Scotland versus an Irish whiskey that makes it expressive of Ireland versus a bourbon that's expressive of the United States, right? And I think there really are elements that really sort of encapsulate the various cultures.
It sounds like a whole bunch of knowledge and in-depth discussion. You're telling me this wasn't just a drinking class?
No, it wasn't. Though we did drink. Though we did have samples, right? Every day we did sample different whiskeys. They were always extremely small pours. I made them. I made them sign a document at the start that was like, they're going to drink responsibly and don't ruin this for Besh. This is a great thing. Don't make it bad for me. And they did a great job. They were all really responsible and we enjoyed the whiskey together. And we would have very small pours of different whiskeys each day so that we could taste and learn the experience of tasting. One of the things we did on the first day, actually, is I brought in a bunch of samples of different smells they're going to experience, smells and tastes they would experience in whiskey. So I brought in different kinds of wood. I brought in different kinds of fruits, different kinds of flowers, other sorts of plants, with the idea that if you can sort of develop your olfactory senses, right? Because so much of drinking a good glass of whiskey, as you know, is smelling and sort of bringing it in through your nose.
And how
first.
That can change your whole experience.
Right, right. Yeah. So we did that with the idea of then we're going to taste whiskeys and look for these flavor notes and talk through them. They did a project where they had to do what I called a tasting session for another student, where they had to sort of walk a different student through, hey, here's how you taste this whiskey. This is what you should be looking for. Here's some history and culture about this particular whiskey. It was a great experience. I really loved it. And I think the students did too.
Well, and I think that there's a real buzz, so to speak, pun intended, around whiskey right now. I think you're seeing it a lot of, like you said, culturally. Right. Just kind of this enthusiasm or just like buzz around it. Because you see documentaries like Neat and things like that that are on Netflix. Right now. And so I would encourage our listeners too to watch some of that, because I thought that did a great job of walking through a distillery, you know, of Buffalo Trace and talking through some of those other ones and just the levels. And it's so interesting thinking of it through like a historian's lens of just what that history looked like, how it went through Prohibition, what changed after that. I mean, the students had to enjoy that aspect of it as well, even if it surprised them when maybe they signed up for this class thinking, hey, I get to sample some whiskeys. Talk to me a little bit about the students' feedback and what their experience was like. What did you witness?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in some ways, you know, not that I like, it was written in the course description that we were going to do the culture and history, but in some ways I like tricked them into doing more than they may have expected in terms of that, right?
Yeah.
Because it's just so much a part of what's going on. And let me just give you one small example of this, right? Drinking or having a small sample of Laphroaig. So Laphroaig is a Isla whiskey in Scotland. So Isla is the small island off the western coast of Scotland, famous for its whiskeys. And one of the things it's famous for is it uses a ton of peat when it smokes the malted barley. It uses a ton of peat, and so that smoky flavor comes through. Okay, so as part of that process, we have to explain what peat is. Right?
Yeah.
We have to explain why they burn peat. Right, which is to talk about the natural sort of the natural resources of Scotland, and this is a great resource that they have a bunch of bogs, and therefore a bunch of peat, and so it's easy to use to burn. They didn't choose it because it was gonna give it that smoky flavor. They chose it because it was there, right?
And the
smoky, yeah, exactly. And the smoky flavor just happened, and then people came to appreciate it later, right? And so just like the directionality of why that flavor's in there has to do with the resources available in the country. And so just as you're tasting and talking about, yeah, you taste the smoke. Why is that there? And you can see what's going on, right?
And what was available to them.
Exactly.
Like, to your exact same point. I mean, you look at kind of some of the American influences with oak and things like that, different woods that they use.
Right. And the requirement to use new American oak, which is basically something that's in place that was put in place in the first place to support the logging industry, right?
Yeah.
You can't use old barrels. Because if you just repeated the barrels, then there would be no reason to be cutting down more oak trees, right?
Yes.
So this requirement was in large part to help support that industry. And then we send them across to Scotland, to Ireland, and they use them again. And, you know.
But I interrupted you.
Yeah,
you're tricking
ahead.
Students. So
Well, I mean, maybe I'm always tricking students in some sense, right?
Learning on a deeper level.
That's right. So just as we're drinking one glass, right, we're doing these additional things. And it feels like, oh, we're just, you know. We're just having a glass of whiskey together. But indeed, this is what I would love them to do 20 years from now, right? They have friends over to their house and they're sitting down and, you know, they're like, oh, let's look up information about this whiskey. What's it supposed to taste like? Oh my gosh, this one was created because, you know, the king did something weird in Scotland one time, right? Which, you know, happens.
Yeah, most definitely.
And, you know, so thinking about those things in that context, right? So, I mean, we're sampling whiskeys, but we're sampling like, you know, tiny little... It amounted to maybe one drink over a 4-hour period.
Sure.
But in the meantime, we're watching documentaries, we're watching short reviews, we're talking through history, we're doing all these other sorts of things to really sort of build up and think through these broader elements to make whiskey a broader cultural phenomenon.
And so did you see or have these conversations or maybe even hear them where students are kind of talking a little more as historians about these different things? I mean, even I know our students, right? Like in our student base, it's like I can imagine them going into it with some preconceptions or, you know, like preconceived ideas of what the class would be. But then by the end of it, really having an appreciation.
I've heard from multiple students that I've sort of ruined them, right? At least insofar as they're like, I can't drink bad whiskey anymore, right?
Yeah.
Which is great, you know? Like, I mean, you know, I don't want to ruin their palates.
Bad whiskey makers, but you know.
That's right, yeah. But I think it's great, right? To learn to appreciate whiskey, I think is part of, not just whiskey. I should put it this way. To learn to appreciate culinary and to learn to appreciate tastes is an important part of like being a good human, right? And it doesn't have to be alcohol, right? That's not really the point of this class.
Yeah.
But it's to learn to appreciate tastes, right? To learn to say, ah, there are good and bad versions of things. And so part of what I wanted to do with this class was to say, hey, here's how you can appreciate this, right? And so I've heard from multiple students, they don't drink the bad whiskey anymore. And, you know, now they drink one glass of whiskey when they're you know, drinking it in an evening because they want one small glass of whiskey that's really good and they can really enjoy it, right?
Yeah.
That's a win, right? You know, not only because, you know, they're not drinking bad whiskey anymore, but now because they've learned how to do this taste, right? And it's a short hop from enjoying a glass of whiskey to enjoying a good plate of food, to enjoying, a good wine, to enjoying, you know, whatever else the case may be.
Well, and even an experience. You know what I mean? Like, I think so many times in today's day and age or in our culture, it's everything is so immediate. Everything is so fleeting.
Absolutely.
Everything is so quick and instantaneous. And what I've noticed is that when you take time to slow down and you truly like understand and develop a palate for the different layers, like you said, whether it's culinary or you're enjoying a spirit or something like that, or you're going to a movie and you're really appreciating the cinematography that went into something like that.
Absolutely.
Or you're just appreciating a sunset. You know, you're just out observing nature. Like, gosh, I think of in Sioux City, Adams Nature Preserve and some of the Stone State Park, even just taking a moment to take all of that in of what is there, what is happening before you. I mean, I think that when you really allow yourself to appreciate those deeper layers, can you have a truer and better understanding of yourself and the world around you? And I think that sounds like a lot of what you open students' eyes to.
That's exactly right. And he's one of my favorite novelists, David Foster Wallace, but he has this great speech he does that I use in a lot of my philosophy classes. It's called This Is Water. And one of the things that he talks about there in that class is how hard it is to truly pay attention, right? How hard it is to like stop and really, really pay attention. Right, to like control yourself and notice what's going on. And I think that that's like half the battle of being a human is it is so easy to not pay attention. It is so easy to get distracted. It is so easy, like you were just saying, to have an experience, like the beautiful sunrise I saw this morning. It's so easy to have that experience and just say, huh, nice, and move on.
Yes.
Right? But to stop and think and carefully consider and reflect upon your considerations and say, no, was that, so for whiskey, was that oak? Or was that spice, right? Was that cherry or was it more apricot, right? And like stop and really think, what were those flavors I'm getting? And ooh, let me smell again. Let me add an ice cube. Let me try one more time. Let me get another taste. Let me talk to the person next to me. This is an experiential interpersonal activity, right? This is not something I just do alone in a room, a dark room.
In isolation,
this is something we do together, right? And it's long been something that humans have done, right? That was part of the class. We went back and we explored the first ways that alcohol was first invented and first created. We tasted a mead that was created in the sort of traditional original way, which is to taste what it would have been like to be a human 2,000 years ago or more, right? And so just sort of experiencing this deep connection with human existence and like paying attention to it, right? Which is hard and not easy. And I fail at it all the time, but just learning and having the opportunity to really focus on that for a little bit, I think is useful. And it's an important element to the lifelong learning that we're committed to here at Morningside.
Yeah. And just a dedication to that education and that experience that Morningside has. I mean, Dr. Besh, it's amazing just even hearing you talk about this. I think that on its face, so many people are like, oh man, that was a whiskey class. And even just hearing you explain it or understanding the depth and the different layers that you were going through with these students and the conversations that I'm sure we're having, I have no doubt that it impacted them, not only in that class thinking about tasting spirits, but as you said, maybe having a greater appreciation for the world around them. So I thank you so much for taking a few moments out of your busy schedule to be able to really talk a little more in depth about this May term, about this exceptional experience that we offer students that's a graduation requirement where they can really not only have fun experiences or learn about new things, but do so through that critical lens or do so through that a deeper understanding, if you will, of maybe a simple concept.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for listening to Inside M Side. Make sure to subscribe, follow for their next episode.